Okay, I'm just going to start the call here, give you a bit of background on how this teleconference took place, and I'll let you know how I actually met Dave and why he is called one of the best, not even web designers, but field designers. I met Dave about 4 years ago from a friend, Lee Benson, and he was like this super amazing web designer, but he understood how to create direct response marketing websites. In other words, he was a web designer that understood marketing. And I'm sure many of you have had that problem where you have a web designer and they are, you know, they're nice guys. They can make you a website that looks good, but you're not making any sales. So when I met Dave Mizoraki, I was, you know, amazed by him. And Dave had been designing me websites from 3 or 4 years ago. And I actually didn't tell too many people about him because it was, he was like my secret weapon. People were asking me, how do you get these sites done? And I wasn't even telling people, where to go. Dave worked for like an underground sort of elite set of clients. Some of his more recent clients, included Armand Morin. And Armand got up on stage. I'm not even sure if Dave wanted him to do this and just said, there's only one person I trust for designing incredible websites that sell. And that's Dave Mizoraki. And the room just flocked to Dave after this. And rather than me tell you the story, I'll introduce you to Dave now.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate that. That's pretty incredible. Yeah, that was, you know, that big seminar was probably the biggest in my career. You know, the next thing I knew, after Armand got up on stage, I had about 400 people swarming me, you know, asking, you know, all kinds of questions and whatnot, which was really cool because I got a chance to help a lot of people. I have to admit, we have a very special guest speaker on the line right now. This guy's one of my biggest mentors, inspirations, you name it. Everybody knows him, copywriter Michael Fortin.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks for being on the call. I really appreciate it. You know, when I started, you were one of my biggest, I guess, influences. I used to read everything that you wrote and check out all your websites and everything like that. So I just wanted to say thanks for doing some kick-ass work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Now I'm blushing. How much do I owe you now?
I'll get you beers at Yonex.
All right.
So we got a lot of stuff to talk about on this call. Hopefully we'll get a chance to cover everything. But I basically broke down this call into six sections. The first thing is direct response design mistakes, the six biggest reasons why websites fail, the psychology of a website visitor, understanding how a web visitor thinks, opt-in page tactics, dramatically boost your opt-in rate, sales response boosting design tricks, order page sales tactics, and upsells. So there's a lot of stuff on the call. So rather than just, you know, BS for a while, let's just, you know, dig into it. The first thing is the six biggest reasons why websites fail. And this is something that I've noticed universal through all the websites that I look at. I surf for years. I've been surfing day in and day out, looking for every single marketing website I can find, because it's been an obsession of mine since I got started back in probably about 1999. So the first reason is, and if you have the worksheet, you'll notice that there's a lot of blanks, so you might want to fill this in.
Sorry, Dave, could I just butt in here? I just want to make sure, everybody, if you haven't got the worksheet, you can go to the main domain now, makemywebsitesell.com, and it will be at the very top of the page where you can download the PDF. It means you can read it on your computer, or you can print it off and scroll down, and it will make this teleseminar experience a lot better. And just before we continue, I want to stress that with a lot of teleconferences, people just talk and they don't have any ideas, and you come off the call without having, you know, any crystal clear concrete steps to improve your website. And after this call, I can guarantee you, you're going to have at least 50 to 60 things that you can do on your website that are not going to cost you anything, that are going to increase your sales. Dave is the real deal. It's not pipe. It's not BS. And he actually forgot to mention the last website that he created was Mike Filsaime's ButterflyMarketing.com, which sold $1.2 million in 7 days and I think $1.5 million in the following 25 days. So make no mistake, what you're going to learn here, make sure you implement it because it's all good stuff. So with that, I'm going to pass you on to the expert, Mr. Dave, and he can tell you exactly what you're doing wrong.
Well, before I get to that, you know, you brought up something, and I want to dispel a very common myth that I think most people have. And I spend hours and hours. You know, Andrew, you've seen it on these marketing message boards. You know, just looking at what people are saying and, you know, spending time and helping out people. People think that direct response design or, you know, web design for direct response is about, you know, putting a color here or making a background graphic or a header graphic or making it look like that. And the, from my perspective, I see it as so much farther, so much more than that, because I guess I kind of see it as a, like an indie race car, and every little fine tune that I can make to it is going to, you know, increase things little by little. And eventually what's going to happen is you have a website that's converting at a very, very high rate, and you can go on and then start another internet business and another one, because you've, you know, you've got the system down. So the thing that I always look at when I do redesigns of websites is, how can I improve the customer's website? How can I simplify the whole experience for the website visitor? And I think you need to have that in mind with everything that you're doing. Is you want to simplify the decision for the website visitor, make it easy for them to do the thing that you want them to do. And I think most people, Andrew, they just don't do that. So let's get back to these mistakes. The first thing is that they don't capture names and email addresses. A lot of people on the call, I mean, this is fundamental, but you'd be surprised. I mean, most people don't understand this. You know, if you've got a great copywriter writing your sales letter, you know, even if you get, Mike, what's a really high conversion rate that you've seen on a first-time?
A really high first-time conversion rate on a sales letter I had just written? Is that what you're saying?
Or anything that you see.
47%.
47%. But even at that rate, you're looking at about 50% of the visitors leaving the website without anything.
Exactly.
So that's why it's important to collect those names and email addresses. So if you're looking to sell anything online, you must be collecting names and emails. And if you combine that with, you know, a free offer on an opt-in page or on a hover ad or an exit pop-up, you know, you basically have a system where you can take the website visitors who are, you know, maybe interested, and then you can turn them into a yes over the course of time. And that's why having an autoresponder and really focusing on writing those is a very big key to, you know, taking your website and making it profitable. The other thing, reason number two, is you're selling a product that nobody wants. And I put, i.e., low demand. You know, I was talking to Andrew about this, and we always were thinking that people tend to think that they're the customer. And they get excited about a product, but they never really think about the target market. You know, they never really, you know.
Yeah, Dave, you know, it's unbelievable. Since I've, you know, started, you know, seven years ago, people, they go in and they're really enthusiastic, and I know a lot of you on the call will be like this, and, you know, you really want to make this product, and you want it to be really successful, and they just this product and put up this website, and then, you know, you want to start making sales, and most of the time, the harsh reality is it doesn't work. So, I mean, we're not going to talk about that today, because this is more about, you know, designing your website to sell. But it's just a key point that you want to research your market before, you know, you go ahead with, you know, with things like that.
Right.
Dave, like one of the, you know, reasons, you know, your website sells so much is, I mean, you need something, as we call, like a clear cut objective. People have these websites, and they have links all over the place leading them off the page. You go to a website and
you know what it is, Andrew? They have so many mistakes in the way that they're set up. They're not set up correctly. And what happens is people tend to, they're so getting traffic to the website. You know, so much traffic, but they have all these leaks on their website. So I think you need to fix the leaks in your website first and then focus on building traffic and scaling it up.
I'd like to add my 5 cents if I could, guys.
Certainly.
Absolutely.
One thing that a lot of people don't understand is, and this is something that I teach in my course in about copywriting, and this applies very well to website design, is that a lot of people tend to design their websites, format their websites, changes to their websites, and their conversion rate still sucks. And then the first thing they do is they blame the design, or they'll try to redesign it in the hope that it'll increase conversion. Well, guess what? The three reasons why a website or a sales or sells is in order of priority, your market, your offer, and then your copy. And those are the top three things, but they are very much in order of priority. Why is that important? Because the market is what a lot of people fail at. people tend to market to the wrong market, or they will try to get traffic to their website, and then they'll base their decisions on how good a sales letter or how good a web design is performing based on numbers that are probably a little skewed there. And that's why it's so important not to make judgment calls. I think the best example of that is whenever I do the critique of a lady who is selling a book on how to cure your insomnia. And we discovered that a lot of people were finding the website through keywords like insomnia. But the problem, why that letter wasn't designed, I mean, it was designed really well, it was formatted really well, and the copy, of course, was pretty good. And we dug a little deep, and we found out that it wasn't because of the fact that people were looking for insomnia. You see, what she was doing was finding out search terms or buying PPC ads, pay-per-click ads, with the words like insomnia. But the problem with that is that people who are looking for insomnia are just looking for medical information or just typical information on insomnia. They're not really looking for, I don't know, a cure for insomnia. They might be in the back of their minds. But what we did is then we went after the market that was really in need of this. People who, for example, have trouble sleeping at night, even people who feel they're going to sleep, they're really in this half-awakened state. And we found out that that's really just another form of insomnia. But the end benefits, the end results were, you know, more energy. If you slept better at night, you had more energy, more productive, you would advance in your career, you would have better relationships with your spouse, with your children, and so on and so on and so forth. So we attacked that market instead, and of course sales went up. And so it's so important to really have the proper market. Mm-hmm. And so when you say low demand, it might not necessarily be because it's a low demand, it might be just the wrong demand. And so before you look at your website and say, okay, how do I redesign my website to convert more, you have to really be careful and fully understand and analyze first, are you attacking the right market?
I think, you know, you got to dig deeper. You got to dug deeper with the problem, and then you found the right solution.
Yeah, what's an interesting thing here, and I mean, this is the greatest way to, you know, if you're going to go into your market, first thing you can do, and I'm sure, you know, Mike and Dave agree with this, is analyze your competition. If you're in a, you know, you want to provide, you know, an investment services, or you want to write an ebook about it, I mean, go to Google, type in investment services, and start clicking on ads. Like, the people are paying money for those AdWords, you know, along the right hand side of the page, and, you know, go through the top, you know, people's pages and see what they're doing right. It's such a great way just to, you know, why like reinvent the wheel? Just see whatever other people are doing and see what the sort of the hot buttons are. See what, you know, what people, what headline people are using. So, you know, that's, you know, a common thing with that market. I mean, for example, and if you look at the Men's Health magazine or Men's Fitness, you always see the same recurring, themes. Like, you always see an emphasis on, you know, make bigger biceps, have the perfect ab workout. And you can always tell by looking at the competition, you can tell what sort of is the, you know, the hot buttons in this market, because these people are using, you know, these magazines are massive multi-million dollar companies, and they're not going to put something on the front cover of an offline magazine if it doesn't work. So that's just, you know, a bit more of an advanced technique, but very simple to use.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, that with that specific thing, that was reason number four, your website doesn't stand out. I always look at the competition for my clients in terms of what they're dealing with. So I see the type of websites that I'm up against in terms of the copy and in terms of the marketing, in terms of the strategy. Because, you know, every market's different. They have different nuances. But the answer that you guys are looking for in this specific one is make your website stand out. It's especially vital in the first fold. And what I mean by that is that's the first screen of your website. We'll get more into that a little bit later. Reason number five is you're lacking traffic. I'm not going to go into that because that's the farthest thing from my specialty. And number six, your copy isn't formatted effectively to sell. And Mike, I know you had an article on your blog. I read about this probably like a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, I want to. This is actually a really cool thing, and I want to make sure that people understand this. That we're not talking about web design on this call, and I want to stress that that's really important, because people come to this call think, you know, they think that we're going to be talking about really cool, nifty, flashy, fancy web design graphics and flash animation and all that wonderful stuff. You have to understand that this is really about designing for direct response. This is really direct response designing, not web designing. And of course, there are differences between websites that truly, truly suck. And I don't mean, I mean, there's two ends of the scale. There are the very fancy brand-oriented million-dollar company who spent huge ad budget on creating fancy websites that only entertain, and they're only meant to build a brand. And then there's the other end of the scale where people design websites that look like it's been put together by a preschooler. There's a fine line, there's a middle, and that's what Dave is actually one of the masters at, and I referred him a lot of clients in the past, and I still do, because he knows how to do that. There's a difference between formatting that increases readership, understanding and comprehension, and sales. And that is, there's a big difference between that and looking fancy or looking clunky. There's a fine middle there. And so what we want to teach you on this call, and what Dave is doing a good job at, is to express some of the mistakes people make, but of course, some of the misunderstandings and myths that we commonly see in our business. Tons of people come to, they want a fancy-looking website. Well, guess what? The fancy-looking website is not going to give you more sales. It's going to make you look better, look good. You know, people will find it entertaining, and people will actually send you a whole bunch of emails, say, hey, great website. I love your website. Did you buy? You know, that's like, the bottom line. And so,
you know, there's a funny thing, not to cut you off, Mike, but there's every time I have a client that's pretty new, first thing they would ask me, you know, they want something really good looking and all these graphics and everything. And the question I ask them is, do you want it to look good or do you want it to sell?
Exactly. You know, and the thing is, yeah, exactly. The question is, do you want to look good or do you want to sell? Do you want to make money? Now, again, like I said, there are two extremes. On this call, we're not here to tell you that you should, you know, become an affiliate junkie with a website that has a gazillion links, banners, and has a whole bunch of different colors with a whole bunch of different font styles with, you know, 4 or 5 million exclamation marks after your headline. And that's not what I'm talking about. That's the other extreme. There is a fine middle, because you do want to communicate the subtle nuances of professionalism, that you're credible and believable, because you do communicate beyond the copy, beyond the message. I truly believe, I'm a big believer in cleanliness and professionalism, but not so much to entertain, but to increase readership and credibility, and eventually, and of course, the ultimate reason, to increase sales. So that's what Dave does and does very, you know, very good at, and this is what I teach a lot of my clients whenever I do critique of copy. Very often I critique the copy and I look at the copy, it's really great copy, but maybe people are just not grasping, there's not enough comprehension. Maybe the cleanliness of the copy is not the formatting is not so much that it helps to get the person to keep on reading, but it stumps them at some point because it just tires the eyes. There's a lot of poor formatting, poor design things that actually cause people to lose readership and lose interest. And those are the types of people who will click away, never buy your product, even though you had the best copy in the world.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I was taught, I went to a very famous advertising school. One of my teachers, very famous person in the advertising industry, and he said, you know, the design is not there to make somebody buy anything. The design is there to help the copy. And the design is there to make you trust the copy and read the copy.
Exactly.
You can have the greatest copy, but if it's not readable, then it doesn't matter.
Now think of the very famous Ada formula. Ada formula is a very standard formula used in pretty much the entire advertising industry, which means attention, interest, desire, and action. So your job in any kind of copy, any kind of website, or any kind of ad is to first grab people's attention, create a bit of interest in what you're trying to sell or trying to tell, the story that you're trying to tell in your copy or in your website, increase desire in what you're trying to sell, and then, of course, getting them to do something, which is a call to action. Design, formatting, all those things that Dave does and is talking about on this call, and Andrew is talking on this call, are elements that should help any one of those four elements. When you want to entertain, is that part of the Ada formula? No. Do you want to build a brand? Possibly. Maybe that's the last action, but I doubt that a lot of people on this call want to build brands. They really want to make money. And finally, is your website there to make the all kinds of colors and all kinds of fonts and just trying to get your message out, you're not following any one of the four parts of the formula. So just remember that in your mind whenever you're looking at your web design. Does it increase attention, increase interest? Does it increase desire? And does it get people to act?
Yeah, Mike, I mean, I think this is very interesting. This is sort of moving on to our next topic, which we've entitled The Psychology of a Web Visitor, because you've got to understand, I mean, in normal media, like traditional, you're reading magazines and stuff like that, it's not as easy to get distracted, but the internet is crazy. It moves so fast. It's like standing in New York and watching one of those films where everything's speeded up 10 times. It's just everything's, you know, happening. And, you know, this is one of the most important things that Dave understands about how, you know, people don't really, they don't read online. They scan, they come to your webpage.
Well, let me stop you for a second, because it's important that you understand who it's coming from. Jacob Nielsen's one of the authorities on web usability. You know, in his book, 50 Websites Deconstructed, I think he said something to the effect that people don't read online, they scan. You know, people read web pages very differently than they do printed pages. So you need to understand it's a different medium. I think in this research report, they said 79% of the people that they tested skimmed the pages very quickly, while only 16% read every word. So this is why it's really, really important that you format your copy effectively so that it captures the most eyeballs, you know, initially.
Yeah, I think if you look at it this way, if you had a single piece of, like a single direct mail letter in front of you, you're focusing on that one single direct mail piece. If you're reading a book, you got just that one book. But when you're online, when you're on the internet, you'll have multiple browser windows open, you'll have your email open, you'll have your instant messenger open, you'll have your desktop, you might have some other application, you might be doing something else. That is very, very akin to a newspaper. And a newspaper, you don't read the very first word of the newspaper and until the very last word of the very last page. Of course you don't. There are two elements of a newspaper, and Dave, you mentioned this so well. The first portion is the above the fold section, which is so important. The second thing is headlines or subheads. Every article in the newspaper is meant for you to scan quickly, and that's how people read newspapers. They read online the same way they read newspapers, unlike a direct mail piece or a book, for example. So they scan and they stop at anyone that grabs their attention and they start reading that. Well, think of that as being your website, because your website is now swimming in an ocean of millions of other websites. Just like your article in a large newspaper, like the New York Times, for example, it's like one article out of several hundreds. So look at it that way.
Yeah, you know, and you hit on so many of these topics. You know, it's all about readability. You know, that's the subheadlines. That's why we use Johnson boxes and, you know, handwritten notes and stuff like that. It's all designed to get somebody to read that sales letter that you spent money for, that you've got a great copywriter like yourself that wrote. So I think it's important that, you know, that first fold, you know, I think it's really, really, really vital. And we'll talk about some techniques later on what you can do to increase readability on those areas. Like we talked about before, the most important part of your copy, as you said, the headline. One of the things I got from you, Mike, very early on, is that people never believe anything at first.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the, I remember years ago you taught this, and you said something to the effect of, it's really hard to believe what's true and what's not, and we need to create some believability that what we have to offer is important. It ties into the needs, wants, goals, and desires of the person reading.
Right. Now, just to sort of continue what Jacob Nielsen said, see, I have this portion of my seminars when I teach this to other students is the fact that people never read anything at first, people never believe anything at first, people never do anything at first.
Mm-hmm.
So your job is to stop them from scanning. That's the very first thing you should do. The second part is to get them to believe what you're saying, because if you don't, even though you grab their attention, if you seem too unbelievable or too vague or too confusing, they're going to close their browser and leave. And the third is to get them to act, which is, of course, a call to action. But in the case of a website design, the above the fold section must complete those three things. It must get people to start reading, which is your headline. And you must also have quality, and I don't mean to say that you need to have a fancy website, but your design must speak for itself. It must have a certain level of quality so that it speaks credibility. And people say, this is not like some, you know, website that was put together with bale and wire, you know? it does communicate credibility and believability. And the third thing, which is action, in this particular case, is to keep on reading. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean hit the sale, because that's part of a copy. It's part also of the design, but it's later on. At this point, when people hit your website, you've got to get them to start reading. You've got them to instantly believe what you're saying. And that could be part of the copy, part design. And the third thing is to get them to start reading, which is the action portion. So that sort of sums it up in a big, you know, nutshell right there.
Yeah, you said it better than I could. the next point that I wanted to talk about was, to fill in the blanks, form follows function. is a very big term in web design circles. And what it means basically is everything on your site, your design, your layouts, your pages, everything, anything you put into the website should be secondary to the purpose of the website and each particular page. So, meaning everything you do has to have a reason. Okay? You want to have a reason for every single thing that's on that website. And you know, I just had this discussion with a client this afternoon, and I told him, you know, if there's not a reason for that website, if it's not going to increase your sales, then there's no reason for it there. So make it easy for somebody to buy. That's one of the other topics I wanted to talk about. There was a recent study here, and based on what this company found, it's Jupiter Media Metrics. They found that convenience, usability, and marketing clarity were even more important than price for online shoppers. So that's pretty interesting stuff.
Dave, I find that, I mean, that's pretty critical, because what you're actually saying and what has been proven is people will not actually care about the price as much as if it's actually easier to buy. So if you make it easier to buy a product that could be, say, $47, but you can't find out how to order, it's too confusing, but there's a simple order process that, and the product might be $67, you can actually, you're actually making a barrier to entry if your website is confusing. So it's very important for people to realize that the price is not the only thing that is going to affect people to buy. And I mean, a lot of people will think, you know, if it's more expensive, they're not going to buy, but you can charge a higher price if your website is designed to make it sell and do so in that way.
I want to add something that's really critical, and it supports what Andrew just said and what Dave just said, and this is so critical, is that Randy Gage, a very famous copywriter, once said that the confused mind always says no. Think about that for a second. If I go to your website, if you're throwing at me a whole bunch of different links, let's say your website is meant to sell a product, and you got an About Us page, you got another page about the history of your company, and you've got another page about you know, a comparative analysis chart of other competitive products, you got another link that leads to an affiliate program, you got another link here, another link there, you know, whatever. What do I, you know, there's an old saying in my business that says, if you give people too many choices, they won't make one.
Yeah, paralysis of analysis. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, which road do I take? And plus, the problem with that, too, is that a buying process is linear. Remember the AIDA formula, A-I-D-A, in that order. So if your website design breaks that formula, like if I click on a link that goes to one page that talks about the price right away, and I haven't even learned about what the value of the product, I don't even know what the hell you're selling in the first place, you've just lost the sale. Now, keep also something in mind that when I say the confused mind always says no, another confusion part is a lot of people tend to create very beautiful, very glitzy website design, and sometimes the, you know, a lot of web designers out there, geeky web designers, will think, hey, I should remove all the underlines from my links. Heck, I'll put my underlines in green instead of blue, or I will not mention anywhere in my copy where to click, or whatever the case is. I mean,
it may look good, but you know, it's,
there's a very well-known web designer, and I can't remember his name. The name is escaping my mind right now, but he once said that he tested this, and he found out that 97.8% of the website that he's analyzed make it confusing for people to order. Like if you say in your copy, click the link, or you know, here's what the way you should order my product, and then you can't find a darn link. Or I think you know this, Dave, the Vic Flanders, who is the author of Web Pages That Suck, the book.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about mystery meat navigation, where people, you know, you don't know it's a link until you mouse over with your mouse and it turns into a link. Well, guess what? You know, how many people will actually have the accidental discovery of your order link if they have to mouse over your link in order to find out how to order your darn product?
Yeah, and it goes back to the thing, you know, you're designing a website that's supposed to sell. If you had a salesman that's, you know, selling a product, would you get on the phone and interrupt his phone call while
exactly.
he's trying to sell? And that's what a lot of people are doing, and they don't understand that. Is it's not designed to, you know, to look pretty, or, you know, to, you know, get a million people saying, hey, I love your website, it's, you know, it's beautiful, blah, 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 blah. You can put up another website for that. This
yeah.
is, you know, this is a direct response. So you're looking for it to get a response. So you need to have a single central focus, have a smooth, as Michael said, linear sequence, and you're going to improve your results. So.
And make your links blue and underline. I know it sounds corny. I know it's the way so traditional, and it's not beautiful like a lot of people will sort of freak out at. They say, oh, I want my links to be, I don't want any underlines, and I don't want this. Regardless, I mean, the fact remains that if you want people to order your product, make it easy for them to order. And that goes as much as for copy as it is for web design.
Yeah, it's you have to make it easy. So many people, I had one client that had two different order pages, two steps, just to, for somebody to order. After they already said, yes, yeah, you know, I want to order from the sales letter, went to one page and then another page. And just by removing that one page, I think we increased conversions by like 30% from what he was getting before.
Exactly.
But you got to make it easy for somebody to buy. So let's talk about the third topic. And we've got this is opt-in page tactics. We're going to show you how to dramatically boost your opt-in rate. You know, I think this is really important because this is the first step in your website sales process is collecting that name and email. So the first thing I wanted to say is that you must measure, keep stats of, you know, that you're communicating the right thing to your target market. And you can measure that by the opt-in rate or opt-in percentage, how many people are opting in versus how many people are on that page. And it's very, very important that you keep stats on every single page that you have up so you can measure every page and the performance of every page.
Dave, could I just interrupt here? What Dave means by, you know, measuring stats is he wants you to, you want to actually know of how many visitors are going to your website, how many people, for example, are opting into your newsletter. So we're going to talk about this more now, but for example, if you have 100 visitors that go to your website and it's set up like a mini sales page where you're saying, do you want to hear more information about how to get the best deal on car insurance? Enter your name and email, and if you have 50 people that enter their name and email out of 100 visitors, you've got a 50% conversion rate. So I just want to explain that for, you know, to make sure everybody's on track here.
An opt-in rate. It's an opt-in
yeah.
rate. So let's just keep that in mind now. The other thing that I think really is important, and I've tested this out with a lot of different websites, the free offer must tie into your paid offer. And I've seen this so many times. I think, Andrew, when we were on the yacht, the mega yacht thing that we filmed, I remember reviewed one of the websites and they had a million different offers. They had some offers on the, like you can opt in and get a free vacation, and they were selling like an internet marketing course.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, we were going down this website and it started off well. They had a headline, then they had a sub headline, and then they started trying to sell me a trip to the Bahamas in the middle of the letter. And I'm sure sometimes people think this, and you know why? I've actually done it before myself. 7 years ago, I did that. I did the same thing. I thought, oh, well, I'll give away a free holiday ticket that I find from one of these websites. And some people think, oh, that's adding value, that's adding bonus, but it's just completely confusing the visitor. Like, if you're going to, you know, it's crazy, but you've got to make sure if you have something on your webpage that is totally irrelevant to your offer, you got to take it off.
Yeah, so the point that I'm trying to make with this is that your free offer, whether you have a newsletter, an audio interview, a teleseminar, anything, it must tie into the paid offer, your product or service. And I guess the phrase, try before you buy, you know, that's one of the, you know, common things you can do. You know, if you have an ebook, for instance, you can give a trial, maybe the first three chapters. But one of the key tips is include the complete table of contents in the book with that first three chapters. So make them want to read that rest of that book. Make them want to buy the rest of that book. And, you know, there's two ways that I use to collect email addresses. First one being a name squeeze. Thank you, Jonathan Mizell. And the second one being a hover ad. I included a couple examples. One of my favorite examples for a name squeeze page, aside from Michael Fortin's copydoctor.com, is wyourdating.com. The site's been around for a while. It's Mike, did I get the URL right?
No, thecopydoctor.com. If they go to Copy Doctor, they'll go to Xerox.
Oh, I thought that was, yeah. Sorry about that.
No, no problem. But here's an interesting point, and you make a really good valid point, is that your opt-in could be something for free, of course. And I mean, from a copy standpoint, I always tell people to explain why. I mean, this is something that my beautiful fiance Sylvie has taught a lot in her own consultations with her clients, is that reasons why will always outsell no reasons why. Just because you're giving something for free means squat. People are going to think in the back of their minds, well, why is he doing that? Or why is she doing that? And then people will not opt in because they fear not opting in. Now, a lot of people don't use the opt-in name squeeze process because they fear that a lot of people will just get fed up. You don't want to opt in. Well, that's not the reason. The reason is that you don't give them an ample reasons why to opt in. And so that's really critical. But here's a good example with the copy doctor site is that the sales letter, the resulting thank you page when people finally subscribe, is the sales letter that promotes the copy doctor site. And the copy doctor site is essentially a bunch of videos. Well, what do I do is on the sales letter, I also offer free 18-minute sampler. So what I do is I took my opt-in page before people hit the sales letter, and it offers the free 18-minute video. So when people subscribe, they're getting the 18-minute video, but they're also getting the sales letter at the same time. So the free offer, exactly what you just said, David, the free offer is tied into the paid offer. So I just wanted to sort of underline.
Yeah, and it's important, but the thing is you've got this system in place to collect those emails. You know, you're doing it, and you've got that system in place. It's not difficult. It's very simple to do. You do an interesting thing on yours that other sites don't do is, you know, a lot of sites, typically the squeeze page is in the first fold.
Right.
And I noticed, you know, on some of the sites, including yours, you've kind of done it a little bit differently. Have you tested it, you know, both out, or have you seen any difference in...
Well, if you add reasons why, if you actually give people ample, you know, you do need a bit of copy. I mean, one of my mentors in this business is Gary Halbert, and Gary Halbert always said you have to sell the free stuff as hard as you sell the paid stuff. And I believe that to a degree because I've tested it, but I found that if you sell people too hard on the opt-in, you know, it's just an opt-in, folks, you know. And if you have 20 pages of copy just to sell them an opt-in, it's not going to do well for you, or it's going to give them the wrong frame of mind. I found that my opt-in rates went down whenever there was too much copy. But I also found that the opt-in rate was not as good, or not so bad, but not as good whenever there was just an opt-in box with just a bit of copy. I found that giving them a few extra paragraphs, especially with bullets and reasons why they should opt-in, increased my opt-in rate dramatically. And here's another key point, you know, something about testing and gathering statistics and why that's so important. If you're a little afraid of testing stuff on your web design, if you're a little afraid of testing stuff on your sales letter, on your website, use your opt-in page as your hotbed for testing. Use your opt-in page to test out different little things so that when you find what really gets people to take action, then you can apply some of these changes to your sales letter and you'll see a huge boost in the back end when you do that because that's, you know, that's the part of testing. A lot of people sit on gold mines by just, you know, putting up a website and not knowing exactly what's working. I can't remember who was the famous advertiser. I can't remember if it was a copywriter or not. I think it was Ogilvy who said that half of my advertising is doing good. I just don't know which half, you know?
you have to test. I mean, you and John and, you know, all you guys just completely drilled that arm in it, just drilled it into my head.
Absolutely.
You know, you got to test. And actually for the last probably like 12 months, we've actually been working on a major system, you know, to do that.
Yeah, I'll give an example. You have a website, you have a long sales letter, and then you had it for, let's say, 2 years, and you haven't tested. And now you decide to test. Let's say you decide to put a picture. You know, you decide to format your website in a certain way, or you decide to do something a little different with your web design. And lo and behold, let's say your sales rate went from, I don't know, 1% to 3%. That's tripled. You just tripled your response rate. Now, that's not the problem. The problem is that you're going to kick yourself by realizing that if your website has been online for 2 years, that's all the money you've just left on the table for 2 years that could have been in your pocket.
Yeah, Mike, I just want to point out something to people as well. Testing is very important, agreed, but you must only test one element at a time because if you change, say, you have a sales page and you have your headline, say you change the headline to a different, you change the wording of the headline and you change the color, which one has worked, Mike?
Yeah, exactly. No, I didn't mean to omit that because that is it's very important. You want to test one variable at a time because you don't know, I mean, heck, you might do a whole bunch of changes to your sales letter and you might get the same conversion rate and you're wondering, okay, it didn't work. Well, maybe one thing actually increased response and the other thing decreased response and they both canceled them out, you know, themselves out.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's very important. You're absolutely right, Andrew. You have to test one variable at a time.
Yeah, so it's really important. I want to totally stress that. I think that's, you know, when I started doing some work for Armand, that's one of the first things I noticed was, you know, people, you know, like him and that level, you know, in the industry, were testing fanatically. I remember a conversation I had with him at about 3 a.m. and he was telling me all the things he was testing at the moment, and I was, you know, I was in shock. You know, and I, here I work with a lot of people that are just getting started, and you know, they don't do anything like that. You know, it's on a totally different level.
I didn't want the call to turn into a testing call.
Yeah.
but
well,
it's actually
important
point of about, you know, when you get web design, any kind of changes you want to do to your web design, sure, there are a lot of great changes that Dave will tell you on this call, that Andrew will tell you on this call, that I will tell you on this call. But the ultimate vote is the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not that we can tell you a lot of things that we've tested that have been proven to convert well. We can tell you a lot of things to do to your website to increase those responses, but, you know, we don't know your market. We're not intimately involved with your business. Every single person is different. So the idea is to test. At least, though, by being on this call, one of the wonderful benefits of being on this call is that now you're privy to tests that have worked. So now you have an idea of what to test rather than trying to do everything by guesswork.
Yeah, you're just going to shoot. It's a big shortcut that you're getting right now. Getting back into this for a second, so people, I know they're trying to fill in the blanks and whatnot. The other thing is the psychology of second interest. You know, I read this somewhere and they said, how many children beg their parents to buy a certain cereal so they can get the free toy inside?
I do, Dave.
Oh, I know. I'm not surprised, Andrew.
I want Tony the Tiger.
So, you know, giving away something helps people make a quick decision in your favor, and it helps you get that opt-in. Single most important piece of real estate, like we said, 75% will come from people reading the entry point. So the first fold is very critical. 4 words that will increase your opt-in conversion rate. Something I use on the bottom of one of mine. It says, I respect your privacy. Or you can put, I respect your email privacy. And I place this beneath the opt-in box.
Yeah, Dave, you see a lot of marketers use this quote, and you're not going to see, a lot of, you know, very well-known marketers using it if it doesn't work. And it's just along the lines of, I respect your privacy. I've been online since 1997. We hit spam as much as you do. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, there's different variations. You know, there's many different variations. I found personally that specific one that I said worked the best for the sites that I've been using. And then at the bottom, I just put a privacy policy at the bottom. But one of the key notes that I found, and I found this on several websites, was the last sentence. It says subscribers also get many unadvertised bonus gifts. You know, that can come in terms of, you know, special newsletters or audio newsletters or whatnot. You want to give people that are even reading that fine print more incentive to, you know, and reassurance to go ahead and fill in their name and email address.
Can I share with you a million-dollar tip?
Go for it.
This is something that I've tested, and people on this call are going to hear for the first time. Here's what I've tested. Adding a privacy policy has increased opt-ins on many, many sites. It also has decreased on some other sites, very small though. And I think what's happening is that when you put a privacy policy on the opt-in form, people tend to now, you've just brought to the top of their mind the fact that their privacy could be at issue here. And therefore that sort of reduces opt-ins. Unless you do this little trick, and this is the million-dollar tip. See, how many websites have you visited? I'm speaking to the people listening on this call. How many websites did you visit that would have an opt-in box, but you know that once you subscribe, you're going to get emails by the boatloads? And a lot of people don't opt in because of that. Not because they're fearful of privacy. A lot of people understand spam. They know that, and you can add a privacy policy, and they probably know that you won't share their email address. What they're afraid of is getting a whole bunch of emails that they have such a hard time to unsubscribe from. So here's what I suggest, and here's a little tip, a test that I've actually done. When you put the privacy policy near the opt-in form, also add, every email comes with an easy one-click unsubscribe link. You just click it, and you will stop receiving these emails forever, whatever, you know, something like that. And mm-hmm. That increases opt-ins dramatically, and I've tested.
That's very interesting,
awesome.
Mike. I'm going to have to apply that. I didn't know about that tip.
I think we're going to have to put the call on hold for about 10 minutes. I got to make a couple of changes to a couple of websites. one of the other things that I do is on the actual submit buttons themselves. You know, we've either tested out different things like free instant access, you know, claim your free interview, grab your free special report, anything but submit. We've usually gotten better response.
It's actually been quite a, I've tested this before, Dave, and I've had massive response. Like, one, this is another, I'm not going to go as far as say $1 million test, but it's pretty good. That one from Mike was very, very good before. But when I'm building like a pre-launch list for, like, just say a product, and I want to build a sub list, and if you're interested in this product, you know, join this list. But I've actually used the submit button that goes, yes, Andrew, please put me on the priority list, because it makes people feel important. They're like, oh yes, I want to be on this priority list. And I had it when they joined this priority list, they would have to confirm, you know, a double opt-in rate. And I was speaking to a very, very well-known marketer, and I said, what was your double opt-in rate of how many people subscribed, how many people, you know, confirmed? And he was like, yeah, I got about 65%. And I said, I got 82%. And that's only, like, you know, one of the only differences I was making. And I also had a screenshot of on the confirmation page that said, here's a screenshot of what the email is going to look like. Watch out for in your email and just click this link and you'll be automatically put on the priority waiting list. Because it makes people feel important that they're part of something. And, you know, again, it's just a good way to boost that your double opt-in confirmation, and also to get the initial subscription.
Absolutely. I agree.
Great. That's a great tip. Let's move forward here. Topic number four. We have sales page response boosting design tricks. How to boost your copy's website sales power. I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, probably about a week and a half ago, and you know, there's a new trend going on now. It's probably been happening for the last couple of years, but we really started to notice now in certain markets that there's an increased customer acquisition cost. So in plain English, it's costing companies more than 3 years ago to acquire the same new customers. So for that reason, I think it's more than ever now, it's vital that you really optimize and improve your whole online sales process. And that's, you know, basically your website and your whole sales process. And with online marketing, you know, we can use the technology that we have to interact with our visitors. You know, now we have, you know, the technology. You have, you know, video. You have ask campaigns, audio, podcasting, Camtasia. You can do questionnaires, polls. You have all these different tools and technology things that you can use to interact. And I think that interaction, that personal touch is what's going to separate you from a lot of other people out there, a lot of the competition. So one of the things I teach my clients is to use the technology within your sales process. Don't let the technology become your sales process. And it's very important. I think a lot of, you know, people tend to confuse the two. They'll, you know, they'll use the, you know, the newest page generator or whatnot, and you know, think that that's going to be the solution for them. And you might make money for a little bit, but you know, it's not a sales process for you. You know, so one of the things I always want you to ask yourself is, how can I simplify the whole online buying experience for a visitor? If you've got 2, 3, 4 order pages, simplify it. You know, if you improve your whole sales process. So I'm going to talk about a couple of different things here. The first one being the rule of 1 = 1. And this basically means 1 page = 1 call to action. If you have an opt-in page, you don't have links going off the page. You don't have AdSense on the page. If you have a sales letter, you don't have links going off the page into another page. You know, keep it very simple. Every page has a different call to action. So establish the goal of what each page is. The other thing is, I put here, well, trying to be a little cheeky here, and you can quote me, putting quotation marks around the headline. We've seen as much as 28% or more response and more attention than, you know, just having a headline without them.
And Dave, that's an incredible tip, because that's literally by putting one quotation mark at the start and putting one quotation mark at the end. That tip will take you 1 second to implement and re-upload on your website. And it can actually, as Dave said, we've tested 28% more attention. You know, it's so simple, but yet it can, you know, have such a dramatic effect on your sales.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And one of the things I notice when I buy, and I buy a lot of stuff, Andrew, online, is bullet points. And Mike, you get me every time you write a sales letter, because you're really good at these. Just bullet points. I think they're very overlooked by a lot of new marketers, and I think those are one of the most critical things. I think those are one of the biggest things that gets people to take action and buy.
I'm going to give a little bit of a tip here as well. Whenever people hit your website, of course, the first thing you do is they skim, scan, and scroll. And we've talked about that. We've talked about Jacob Nielsen talking about that. So your job to stop them from skimming, scanning, and scrolling, of course, is to implement things on your web page that cause the eye to stop, whatever that might be. You know, that I call that eyeball-grabbing copy or eyeball-grabbing web design. And the reason why that's so important is that you want people to stop at some point to read whatever piece of information that you've, you know, put in a certain section so that they can see what you're doing or they can see what it means, and then they can start to realize, oh, this is something I might want to read. And that's why, for example, bullets, because they're slightly indented, when people scroll up and down a web page, you see, if you scroll up and down a web page very fast, it looks like one big blur, especially if every block and every paragraph looks exactly the same. There's nothing there that pulls people's attention, that stops people from scanning. That's why subheads throughout the copy, and especially subheads that are in larger font in the middle, they're centered. Because when people scroll up and down a long scrolling web page, the headers throughout the copy are very similar to the headlines of articles in a newspaper. Remember, think of a web page as being like a newspaper. So when people scroll up and down, they'll stop at subheads. Now, your subheads, of course, I don't want this call to become a copywriting call. There's a lot of little copywriting techniques that you'll need to implement in order to make those subheads really alluring and compelling. But just adding those really help. Bullets help, especially if you use, for example, little graphic bullets. One of the people that I look up to in this business a lot is Clayton Makepeace, very, very top copywriter.
I was just on the call with him this afternoon.
Well, there you go. And then Clayton has on his website red bullets. They're completely different. So when you scroll up and down Clayton's sales letter, whatever the case is, you naturally tend to stop at the bullets because they get your attention. The headline, pictures, and I do mean, you know, you mentioned something, Dave, I think, when you said that if you add elements to a web page, and that it makes a lot of sense to me, it should be part of your sales process. Well, to me, it's also part of the stopping them from scanning process. Little videos, little audio buttons, little pictures that may, it doesn't have to be a picture of the author. It could be a picture that represents the benefit of the product. I wrote copy for a sales letter, and I designed a website for a sales letter that sold a dating product. Well, guess what? We added just a little picture of a couple in loving embrace. They're totally in love with each other, and that increased sales, especially because of the fact that it stopped people from scanning. And Johnson boxes, J boxes, which are basically tables in the middle of your web page, different colors or at least a border around it that signals some kind of information that's critical, and it also causes people to stop scanning. Anyways, I'm going ahead of you. I don't mean to take the wind out of your sails, but that's just a tip I wanted to
give. So you gave me a chance to get a drink. So that was a good thing. Yeah, the Johnson boxes are really important. I think, you know, one of the things I learned when I was really studying and modeling your stuff was you want to put them around very key points. You know, sometimes you can put them around bullet points, key features, maybe guarantees, even an opt-in form, the close. These are all different areas where, you know, I tend to put these Johnson boxes. One of the things I try to do is put a border around it because I think it'll make it again, eyeball gravity. It makes it stops your eyes.
Yeah.
But you want to make it dark enough to stand out versus the background color of the Johnson box. Another tip you can do is try a dashed border. You can get an even more pronounced effect with that.
Exactly.
One of the other tricks is, you know, audio generator. It's a very, very great tool.
Sorry, Dale, could I just butt in here? Because there's a very important point that you can add in the Johnson box. I'm sure you've seen, like, testimonials and what we call these Johnson boxes. But an even more effective way of drawing people's eyes is using a sub-headline within the testimonial. So you pick out the most important part about the testimonial, like, saved me 30% on my car insurance renewal this year. And then you have the rest of it.
Yeah, it's designed to grab somebody.
You should put a headline in every Johnson box, especially with every testimonial. Pull out the one result, the one big benefit, the one big takeaway from that testimonial, and turn that into a headline before the testimonial. Because how many testimonials have you read? You know, do you go around websites, and if the website has like 20, 30, 40 testimonials, do you actually read every single one of them? Of course you don't. And that's what Andrew said at the very beginning of this call, is that the web is such a different media. People are in a hurry. Their attention spans are so small. So putting headlines stops them, and they read something, and they say, oh, here's a headline for a testimonial that actually represents a result or a situation or a benefit that I can identify myself with, and they'll start reading that testimonial, and that's been proven. So anyways, I just wanted to add my 2 cents there.
So let's get back to this for a second. The audio, I love it. I love it. I use it on pretty much all my sites. One of the tricks that I learned from Arun was tell the people in the audio exactly what you want them to do. Or exactly, if you have an order page, tell them exactly what's going to happen. Explain to them the process. You know, reassure them. You know, so I think that's something definitely to test out. You know, I don't use it with one of my websites right now because it just wasn't working as good as it was on some of the other websites. So that's something to keep note of, that sometimes it's going to work in certain markets it might not. The other thing is drop caps. This is a very old print technique, and it's used to increase readability. For those of you that are not sure what it is, if you go to our website, makemywebsitesell.com, you can see the drop cap. Basically, the first letter, it's a graphic, typically, or sometimes it doesn't have to be. And it's just a big graphic. Usually it's got like a drop shadow behind it, and it starts the paragraph. It makes you read. Very important. I've used this, and I've seen about a 15% increase in time spent on the page just by adding this.
Dave, just before we move off audio, okay, audio is a great invention on websites, and the fact, you know, you can add it so easily. But one thing I hate, and this is like, for example, I was on a website, myspace.com, today, and I was just scrolling around it, and then every time I load up someone's page, there's music playing in the background, and it really starts to tick me off. Now, it's not the fact that the audio's playing is ticking me off. It's the fact that I haven't activated it myself. I want to be able to, you know, control the audio. So if your website automatically loads up and there's audio on it, and in most cases, you know, it does, you know, decrease conversions. There are some cases, but generally for the first page, you don't want to have automatic audio playing. You want the reader to click here to listen to the audio.
No, make it permission based. You know, it's kind of like getting one of those annoying pop-up windows.
It also gets people to be engaged in the copy and starts the whole process of stopping them from scanning.
Right. It's interactivity. You know, use the medium that you have available. Use any kind of interactivity that you can add to that site, to that copy. You know, you're great at it. Maria is also great at it. Maria Veloso. She uses something called an involvement device that she talks about in her courses. One of the other things I dug up was show happiness. They've done a study of Coca-Cola ads over the last 100 years, and they found that the one common element in all the successful ads was happiness, that they had smiling people in each one of those successful ads. So putting smiling people in your ads could make, you know, people associate good feelings with your product. But again, it's a judgment call. You got to know where to use it. You don't want to just stick a, you know, happy person on your website for no reason. You know, that's not going to do anything. But, you know, if there's an instance where you can use it, you know, then use it. This is one of my favorite things, Mike. I have never talked to you about this thing. It's I just call it the zigzag. And it just says make them zigzag. And what I do is I'll tend to add an image on the right-hand side of the copy within the first couple of paragraphs that ties into, you know, the beginning. So basically what happens is I'm making their eyes zigzag from the headline down to the left where the drop cap is, down to the right where the image is. And from them doing that, I'm trying to get them to read that first few paragraphs. And I think if I can do that, then I think the copy's well written enough where they're going to continue to start reading the rest of the copy.
Good point.
You know, so if you can do that, you know, it's a three thing. You'll see it on our website again, makemywebsitesell.com. I use that technique to get people to read. One of the other things you can do is for the first paragraph or so, maybe make the font size maybe 1 or 2 points bigger. This is a very, very common technique in magazine and editorial design. They've been doing this for years. Pick up any magazine, you'll see the first few paragraphs or the first paragraph very big. The secret site I used to create handwritten notes, two of them. The first one is dafont.com, dafont.com. They've got tons and tons and tons of free fonts. This is a little minor secret font site, I guess you could say. The other site some people might know is vletter.com, where you can actually type in something, and it really looks handwritten, which is pretty cool. So I think you can use these in your headlines, maybe subheadlines. Test them out. You can use these little handwritten notes at different points, and they definitely increase readability. People start to look at it and say, you know, maybe you actually did write it. You know, and I know you use this, Mike, for your guarantees.
Sure.
I use it throughout copy. I've actually used it in copy that I've written for other people, like, for example, Traffic Secrets by John Reese.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of those, and it doesn't have to be just, you know, handwritten font. It could be like, you know, little stars beside areas, and then you've got in handwritten font that says, please read this section. It's very important. Marlon Sanders does that all the time.
He's really good. He does it on a lot of his sites now.
Exactly, and it's the same reason that I initially told you about 50 minutes ago, is that when people scan up and down a web page, those are elements that will cause people to stop scanning and to start reading.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about this in a little bit for what I do with order buttons. I've got a nice little technique that I use with that. The other thing is proof. Give me proof. You know, people don't believe anything you say online. So you want to back things up as much as possible with proof. And, you know, these are more graphics that I would use on a website than, you know, a header maybe. So for proof graphics, I'm talking about screenshots, emails. Some people have used checks, receipt, PayPal graphics, anything that you can use to show a visitor proof to back up what you're saying. You know, that's the reason why I use testimonials. You know, they tell stories and they give people proof that they can get results using your product or service.
Let me underline that 5,000 times, all right?
Proof.
That is the biggest element that's missing in almost 99.9% of the websites that I critique or write copy for. I tell you, proof is the thing that a lot of people, when they hit your website, they don't know you from a hole in the wall. You're this electronic veil between you and that business. You could be a scammer. You could be a fraudster. You could be a spammer for all they know. So proof, 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 proof. As much proof as you possibly can.
Yeah, they're hearing people, Mike, that are, apart from your own words, they're actually hearing, oh, these are other people that actually have, you know, ordered this product or bought it, and, you know, they're endorsing this guy. So, you know, it gives more believability to your website.
Yeah, but anything you can show, you know, any kind of graphics you can show. If you have a screenshot, you've got checks, anything that you can show. If you were an airplane pilot, show a picture of you flying an airplane. If you were in the military, show pictures of that. You know, it just builds more of that story, and it engages the reader more.
One of the things that I talk a lot about in my courses, and that's something that actually comes from my background in cosmetic surgery, because as a lot of people know, I started as a copywriter for cosmetic surgeons and specifically for hair transplant surgeons. And one of the most crucial elements of any ad in the cosmetic surgery industry is the before and after. And you see this in the weight loss industry, you see this in the bodybuilding industry, and so on and so forth.
Especially even on infomercials, Mike, you know, on TV.
Exactly.
You know, I lost 15 pounds in 10 days.
Exactly. Here's another example. I wrote copy for someone who used to grow up in the projects. In this very decrepit, which is now abandoned house or apartment project, there's graffiti all over the place. And what we've done is we took a picture of the house, we put it on the copy, and we said, you know, here's the house that I grew up in. And, you know, as you can see, my future was, it looked like it was pretty bleak at that time. But now that I've made X number of dollars using X system, here's a picture of my new 8,000-foot mansion, and there's a picture of the mansion, you know. Those speak so loud in terms of proof, because it actually shows people that they can, you know, that this person actually went from humble beginnings to million-dollar status, whatever the case is. But a before and after picture is very powerful, even in the copy. And this is something that we talked about. I'm sure, Dave, you were probably going to talk about, but I'm going to steal the wind out of your sails again, is to add pictures of people giving the testimonials. Pictures of a person that's maybe giving the testimonial, an audio button of the person talking about their testimonial. And those really do increase sales, because it shows that the testimonials are not made up. They actually come from real living people.
Here's another thing that I've seen that's used very successfully is they'll actually get the person's occupation.
Yeah.
And use that in the testimonial, like location and occupation, because it makes the person more real. You know, if you're an engineer and you see this guy's an engineer and he had great results using your product, and maybe he had similar challenges and, you know, problems that you had, you're more likely to buy it.
Exactly.
You know, so I think that's very important, so people can identify with other people. So the more real you can those people.
John Reese, whenever he relaunched Traffic Secrets, and I helped him on the rewrite of the sales letter. I wrote the initial one, and
mm-hmm.
I helped him on the relaunch of the second one. And what he did was he gathered testimonials from people, but he specifically asked them for screenshots of their statistical programs to show people they've increased in traffic. to show, you know, their PayPal accounts to see, to show people that they've actually increased in sales and so on and so forth. So on the testimonials, it wasn't just screenshots of the author, but it's also screenshots of the testimonials of people actually saying, hey, I've, you know, your traffic secret has helped me increase my traffic by 341%. And there's an actual graphic of their weblog statistics software, and it shows, you know, a big bump in traffic. So yeah, as much proof as you possibly can. I just want to, I cannot.
Yeah, well, it's important. It's very, very important. Speaking of which, it might not be obvious to some people. Some people it might be very obvious, but I've seen tons and tons of websites that do not have a product shot. And this is very, very critical. I know in print and, you know, when I was in advertising school, this is very, very critical. You know, they demand they have a product shot almost in every single ad.
eBay reports that ads that have a shot of the product on the eBay listing has 400% more bids than those without pictures. So, yeah, absolutely.
Speak for itself. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you go on a dating website and you want to meet somebody, a male or female, and you don't have a picture up. Well, studies have proven 15 times more responses by having a picture up. So the thing of product shot up for whatever it is, very, very important. You know, what's his name did it very well. I remember when he was, you know, launching his product and he had the very famous product on the brown carpet. And that was funny. People want to see what they're buying though.
You're saying that because that's, and I find that a little funny because just today I launched a new product at breakthroughcopywriting.com and I had to take the package out, pull all the DVDs, all the CDs, and I put it on my brown carpet. I took a digital camera, I took a picture of it, and I added it on the website. But yeah, absolutely, product shots do increase sales. They do. They really, really do.
Nice. And, you know, we talked about this. I really wanted to just drill this into people's head. People don't read every word online. So you need to get things, you need to use other things to get people to read specific words like benefits and whatnot, words that are going to convey the biggest benefits to the visitor. So that's why we use, you know, audio, highlighting, bold, italics, another font color, Johnson box, subheadlines, you know, graphics, handwriting, anything to stop that visitor dead in his tracks or her tracks and get them to read that specific point of copy. A couple of little points here. You know, try to make sure that your paragraphs are no more than 4 to 5 lines deep. I try to stick with less points. You know, I know, Mike, you're a real stickler with that stuff too.
Well, I know that web usability studies have proven that. You know, one of the reasons why a lot of people ask me, Mike, why do you put everything into a single centered table rather than, let's say, a fluid table? And just for people who don't know what that means on this call, a fluid table is a table that's actually, the width is in a percentage, like, for example, 100% or 90%.
Yeah, so it's going to expand and contract.
Yeah. Well, what I found, and this is, has been proven to increase response and increase sales, is that, first of all, a table that's within, let's say, 600 to 700 pixels in width, which is fixed and centered, it fits on every monitor resolution. If, let's say, you have the lowest common denominator, and these days with technology, I think it's 800 by 600 pixels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that type of table will fit on that monitor as much as it will fit on a 1200 by 1600 monitor pixel resolution monitor. But the second benefit is that it pushes the characters to be no more than 65 to 70 characters in length, and you should keep your paragraphs no more than 4 to 5 lines deep. Because it does keep, it's really a readership issue.
Yeah.
People tend to read more. I think it was actually proven with something like 22%. It increased readership by 22% by making your paragraphs shorter and put into a table of 600 to 700 pixels wide.
Yeah, you know, I found that when you've got a sales letter that's longer, and I've had to deal with this with certain websites where the graphics that they've sent me were, you know, I couldn't modify them. They were just wider than that. But it's very hard to read the sales copy, I find. Because you just find yourself just looking all the way across your screen. And if you have a big screen like I do, I've got a 17-inch laptop that I'm looking at right now, it's hard to read. So you have to understand the medium that you're working with. You know, you're designing on a screen, not on a piece of paper. The other thing is the involvement device and something that gets readers to interact with your web copy and makes them more likely to continue reading. Frank, are you there?
Here.
Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Great, you?
Good, good. But Mike, this is one of my clients. His name is Frank. He's got an awesome website. I've heard of it for all. You should definitely check it out. It's womenfiguredout.com.
Could I have 10 copies of it, frankly? I still can't figure them out.
No, we just lost all the women on the call now.
Well, that's my big claim up front, knowing how to figure out women.
Frank's got an awesome book. He was offline, and I guess, Frank, you wanted to take your book online.
Right.
And we started using the website. Tell everybody, how's the website doing right now?
Well, let's see. The short answer is, since we launched on New Year's, which I thought was not so great idea to do, right now we're over the $20,000 mark already.
Awesome.
But more importantly, on New Year's, what happened was I thought we'd get like maybe 100 orders in 2 weeks because of the holiday, and turns out we did about 100 orders in 2 days. And even right up to the very minutes of New Year's and right into the few minutes into the New Year, we were getting orders, and my family and friends were sitting here hitting the refresh button, and it became a big, big celebration as much as the, as much as the New Year. It was like, oh, hit the refresh button and see how much more money came in. So, and you're like, these people are supposed to be outside partying, getting drunk, doing, everything for New Year's, and they're sitting out there in cyberspace going, yeah, I need this book. So
it's pretty awesome, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. It actually made me want to do like a chart, and because the orders were coming in so fast, I want to appreciate the moment, and I made a chart, and I said, okay, we're going to hit like the $10,000 mark. And by the time I was done with the chart, we already passed the $10,000 mark, and the chart was useless. So I'm like, I said, that's why I said my testimonial, like the movie Jaws, how they say in the movie Jaws, you're going to need a bigger boat. I say, if you listen to, to Dave's techniques here, you're going to need a bigger sales chart. So, and you're not going to sleep that much because you're going to keep hitting the refresh button. But, when the orders, we're doing that now. I know we're looking at, doing like an upsell and a hub red. what I'm getting at there.
wait till it's uploaded.
But if I could just tell, there's a couple, like 3 points here that you guys were covering. You said about, direct response, kind of like versus institutional ads, like for branding. What I've always heard is, some people don't know if they should just have an institutional ad out there just for branding. If you can't afford to advertise on the Super Bowl, then don't have an institutional ad. Don't have a direct response. So, most people fall into that category. So just have a direct response. The other one where you're talking about the free bonuses, I think Jay Abraham once switched the product and the free bonuses. So, I mean, I wound up handing him $895 to subscribe to some newsletter that I really didn't want just so I can get my hands on the 3 special reports that were like $100. So no doubt he could either sell me $100 and get $100 out of me and then just put me into this newsletter thing that I didn't really care about. Or he can get, $900 out of me and say, you get the newsletter and you get these reports for free. And, he obviously, made the better decision. But, and the other one was, regarding free bonuses, what I found is that, I've got like, I think $40 worth of free bonuses, not $4,000.
Right.
Worth of
We talked about that before.
Yeah. So
on the phone calls me and you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the price of your product, Frank, I believe is around $27.
It's just a $27 ebook.
Yeah, it's a $27 ebook, and you've already done what, 20,000 it's the beginning of March right now.
Right.
Did you start off with a website before that? Did you start off with any affiliates, anything?
I was promoting my competition's product while I was selling my soft cover book, but the physical book, through Amazon. I had like 1 or 2 affiliate links that I would just type up on a piece of paper, sign the book, shove it in there, and away it would go. And I was making some affiliate commissions selling my competitors' books. But that's all I was doing online before this point.
Yeah, and for some people, you hear, like Jeff Walker, did a lot of money. Mike Fossame did, like over $1 million. I mean, that's a lot of money, but these are established people. And here, you've come into a very competitive market. Keep in mind, this is a dating market, very, very competitive. And you've been kicking butt, just using a few of these techniques, and it's still a work in progress, as we just keep, building things and, adding things to the sales process and refining it, the results are just going to keep getting better and better.
Right.
One of the reasons why I wanted to show your site is we used an involvement device in the beginning. I modified it slightly from what you had sent me initially, but I definitely used out of the zigzag principle where we have the headline, but we used a star, the handwritten star.
Right.
On the left-hand side, and then we just drag it right down to the guy kissing the girl.
Right.
So,
it's a slippery slope. I mean, that's what you're, you know, trying to get at. I think that
yeah,
one,
yeah,
the,
and
the,
you
the
know,
bucket
we use a lot of
spill. What one to the
yeah,
other.
Exactly. We use a lot of different techniques here. One of the things we did is the calls to action. You know, I personally, I've found that when you have at least 6 calls to action, I tend to get better results.
Yeah.
I've sent it up to 10, but I found at least somewhere around 6, give or take.
Well, you got like 7 on mine, and it's only like if you printed it out, it's only 12 pages long, and you got 7 calls to action. I'm like, you sure you want to do this? And you're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. You know, and I was like, because you said as soon as somebody wants to buy, they got to look, they got to be, you know, within, you know, a few inches of that order button. And that's.
Make it easy. Make it easy. You know, Mike, one of the things I try to do is typically put at least one link within a screen fold.
Here's a little tip for you. This is actually from test results that I've conducted, and some of the marketers that I've written copy for have tested. If you're selling a high ticket item, especially if you're selling a high ticket item without an opt-in page, you want to put the least amount of links possible. Why? Because when people hit your website and they see that it's a long scrolling web copy, they want to know what the price is to justify reading the copy. Not to buy your product, but to justify reading your copy because their time is so short. And so what they tend to do is they look for that order link or that order button, and if you have too many of them, of course, you're just giving them a chance to procrastinate. You've just invited procrastination. However, if you have an opt-in page, which is why opt-in pages are so crucial, they're so important, because once they've opted in, then you can put as many links as you want, and if they leave, who cares? Because now you've got them on an autoresponder system, and you can bring them back to the sales letter, you can give them a lot more reasons why, you can do all those wonderful stuff that causes you to increase your sales in the back end. But that's what I found, and this is just a little bit of a tip. Do you need to put, you know, can you put 6 on the long copy sales letter with a high-ticket item? Yes, but don't put it too early, because now you've just invited procrastination before they actually start reading your copy, especially to find out if, you know, what the heck are you selling in the first place, and what's the value behind it?
So, well, I've got a good trick on that. I was gonna actually mention, and it's good that you bring that up. What I've tended to do, started testing this out on one of my websites, is starting off those links, but making them as text links within the copy, and gradually moving towards a stronger call to action using graphic order buttons.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that too. I found that when people, especially when people put buttons too early, or, you know, those large font links,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, 24 point size and capitalize every single word, that
right.
actually decreased response because it drew attention to the link.
Right.
What you don't want to do, because you want people to start reading the copy. The first job of your headline, especially in the first fold, is to get people to start reading, not to buy your product. Or in this particular case, not to find out what the price is, to justify reading the copy. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Links more at the beginning and buttons, I would agree with that. In fact, I think I've tested it maybe just once. Not too sure, but I'm going to test that even more.
it's definitely something good.
You put those two little check boxes with mine of those questions that I had at the beginning there. So it's like, you know, especially guys, you know, you see something, you want to check the box. And it really doesn't do anything or influence, you know, the order. It's just something there to, you know, like you said, create involvement and get them used to clicking buttons.
Right, right. And we're going to use this on the next topic, which is the order page sales tactics. And what I always do when I look at the whole overall system is I look at how I can improve the system. How can I simplify the buying experience? I want to keep drilling this into your head. You know, you always want to simplify the path for the user, make it easy for them to get into your funnel. So the first thing I look at is let the customer know who they're doing business with. So if you can put a small logo, very small, it doesn't have to be big. It can even be just in text, just your company name. So you can put a small logo at the top of the order page. And if you have any questions, actually what I'm working on right now is providing everybody for the call for the resale rights was an actual template you can use. I'll actually have an HTML page with some graphics that you can actually use and, you know, customize so you can see everything that I'm talking about. The involvement device that you can use, and everybody on the call has probably seen this over and over again, is a checkbox. It's unchecked, and then you'll typically see the word yes with a thing behind it, and I'm more than ready to, you know, blah, 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 blah. And again, you can see our order page for that. The other thing you could do is add a testimonial from either a customer or an expert in your field, and what I tend to do is use a Johnson box for that, a little bit of a colored box, to make it stand out, but I want to make sure that it's specifically tied into any potential objections that somebody may or may not have when they're hitting that order page. So it's very important that the testimonial ties into that order page. The other thing is audio. Audio on the page, we've seen increased conversions in certain cases, telling the customers what to do, how the order process worked. The other thing is credit card graphics on the order form. One shopping cart, that's what I use. They have it at the bottom. I tend to use it at the top as well in certain cases when I'm testing. But here's a little tip that I unfortunately learned the hard way is make sure you use the credit cards that you accept because I've had tons and tons of declines by people that were ordering the product and thought because of the graphics that I accepted American Express, but unfortunately at the time I didn't. So, you know, keep that in mind. It's very important. Use the credit card graphics that you accept. Also, make sure that you have more than one form of payment. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
On that Millionaire's Mega Yacht website, you did a multi-payment, correct?
Yes, and I mean, I think I had about, the product was selling for $577 at the time. By offering the multi-payment option, I believe I had about 58% of people who took the multi-payment. Now, obviously, if I didn't offer the multi-payment, I'm still going to get people who'll just pay the full price. But I'm sure if I didn't offer it, I would have lost a lot more sales overall. So,
right. I think I found from, you know, one of the sites I was testing about 4 to 18% decrease in sales.
Well, I mean, John Reese, he did over $1 million in launch day. He offered a payment plan. Mike Filsaime, Butterfly Marketing, he had a 3-part payment plan. So, I mean, if the guys who are making $1 million and as much as a day are doing it, then it's so pretty self-explanatory.
Well, I think it's important that you use it with higher end products. You know, if you've got a more expensive product for, you know, a $27 ebook that Frank's selling, I don't think it's necessary, you know, to do a multi-payment situation.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing that I try to do is make the customer feel safe using maybe if you're registered with the Better Business Bureau, you can grab one of their logos that they provide for you. Another one is a Trust E graphic. You can register and sign up with them. There's another one that's very frequently used, like a lock or secure graphic. You'll see one used at the top of our order form. And all these graphics will tend to make the customer feel safe. They reassure the customer so that when they place their order that they know that you're, you know, a legitimate company, that, you know, you're not like some fly-by-night company. So it's very important that you reassure the customer that their order is safe, their order is guaranteed and secure. So that's very important. I've just added that at the bottom of one of my order forms, and I've noticed an increase in response. I don't know what percentage it is yet, but I think it was pretty significant. One of the other things is, this was a really good technique. I'm actually working on setting up the system right now. It's a 2-step order system. And what I noticed was on one of my order forms with this specific business, I was getting about 20 to 25% of the people that hit that order page that buy. Now, according to some of my friends that are other marketers, they tend to think that that's pretty good. But I tend to think that about 75% of those people who hit that page didn't buy. And I think that those are the easiest targets that I have to, you know, to try to reclaim them, I guess, so to speak. I think obviously they're interested at some point on some level because, you know, they're clicking on that order form. So this 2-step process is this. You have, they click the order. Instead of going to your order form, you have a lead-in page where it'll basically say, you know, step 1-2. And you're going to collect their name and email address. The redirect or the thank you page is the actual order form. So what happens is if the person does not continue with the purchase, you can follow up with them with a brand new autoresponder sequence that you've written specifically to, you know, try to get a lost cause back. So you're testing your order page. You're creating what I call a bounce system, and it's a very effective way to increase your sales and profitability with no cost because all you're doing is the people are already clicking. They're just not doing anything. So basically what's happening is you've got a new list with people that are, they're obviously interested in your product. They haven't bought for some reason. Your job is to find out exactly why. So one of the things you can do is send them an email instantly, finding out exactly why they didn't order and what stopped them. You can see on the worksheet, I've got a sample email that you can use out. I'm not going to read it word for word for you, but basically the reason that you're sending this out is you want to collect data. You're trying to find common themes, trying to find out if there's a pattern. Okay, and what that's going to do is when you're armed with that information, you're going to be able to refine and test your order page. And at the same time, you can craft emails in that order bounce autoresponder sequence that is going to address the most common issues and then direct them back to the order page. So through this, you've got a system now to you know, try to increase conversions on that order page and find out exactly why people aren't buying. If anybody's listening to this call and does that one tip alone, I mean, that could be worth six figures to anybody listening on the call. If you figure out how many people click on the order page and don't buy.
Yeah, Dave, what I find, this was actually happened by mistake, but sometimes people have a link where they just say, click here to order my product for I'll actually give you a real-life example. I had a website called GuruMailer.com, GuruMailer.com, and I was selling this product for $27 a month. So I had an order link that said, click here to order for $27 a month, and then it took them to the order form, which was, you know, formatted with the HTML, which, you know, we've just talked about there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having about 13%, I think, who were ordering. But then what happened was there was an error on my shopping cart, and I couldn't actually put the HTML on the order form. I just had a basic, you know, submit your credit card information. So what actually happened was my sales, just from this one thing, my sales decreased by nearly three times. That is insane. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, so it's very important that you avoid these things. One of the other things is, and I've read a lot about this, this is a study that I've dug up here, if you have a physical product, look to offer free shipping. And you can expect to see a dramatic improvement in your order page conversions and overall conversions by including free shipping. And according to this research done by the NPD Group and BizRate.com, they found that 24% of the time, the visitors clicked off their order pages because shipping and handling costs are higher than they expected. So another way you can do it is just bundle it into the price and then give it for free, or you can just actually give it for free. So something to keep in mind if you have a physical product. The other thing is incentivize.
I just wanted to add a little thing based on what you just said earlier on testing order page conversions. A little test that you might want to do is don't talk about free shipping, or even, you know, mention that you do charge shipping, and then on the order page say, hey, there's a free bonus. Shipping is free. And see how much more conversions on your order page you get versus the sales letter.
Right. That's a great tip. Again, it's another thing for you to test. You know, these are all ideas for you to test, and any one of these can just explode your sales. I mean, any one of these tons that we're going through. One of the other ones that I've started using is, and I got this from John Reese from looking at one of his websites, was incentivizing the customer to continue. And what I started doing was giving a bonus that's only available on the order page. So they hit the order page and it says, hey, you know, if you order within the next, you know, 3 minutes, I'm going to include a free, you know, 50-page bonus report or whatnot. Obviously, you want to tie it into the whole product or service that you're offering, but it's a great way to add some urgency and incentivize the customer to place their order. One of the other things is offer a discount. And the thing that I wrote here was people would rather pay $197 for a $297 product than for a $197 product. So, you know, show people that they're getting a good deal. People always like to get a good deal. That's what my dad used to tell me. So I always believe what my dad says. let's go to the sixth topic here. Pretty close to wrapping things up on this topic. The art of the upsell. Instantly increase your profits by as much as 40% or more. Upsells are vital to some companies making a profit or loss. I know some companies that their profit is completely on upsells. They don't make any money on the front-end product. So it's very, very important. And this can be the difference between you making $1,000 a month and making $2,500 a month or $25,000 a month.
Yeah, Dave, I want to actually give a real-life example here, because this has been where I've made a ton of extra profit for something that takes, you know, 10 minutes to implement. I sell resale licenses to products where, you know, people can, you know, obviously, they buy the product and then they have rights to, you know, sell themselves for 100% profit.
Right.
But what I do is on the order page, I go, the resale licenses maybe sell for $700. I write, by the way, if you're interested in, you know, getting a copy of this resale license that is now sold out, you can't get it anywhere else. Retail price would be $1,000. You can add it to your shopping cart now for just $400. And they just check a box, you know, put a tick mark in the box, and that adds it to their order. Or you can have click here and it takes them to, you know, a different order link. But I've had as much as 41%, you know, take the extra license. So my average order goes up from $697 to, I believe it was $894. Now, if you multiply that by 100 resale licenses, that's an extra approximately $200 and something, but it's an extra $20,000 to $25,000 overall for implementing something that takes 10 minutes, and that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's not bad for 10 minutes worth of work. So he mentioned a couple of things I'm going to talk about, but, you know, everything that you add, any system that you add, anything that you have on your website right now, you know, keep in mind, again, simplifying the decision for the user. Make it easy for them. You know, and, you know, with this in particular, the old saying is true. The money's in the back end. The money's in the upsells. There's two places that I use upsells. Number one is the order page, and number two is the thank you page or download page, however you want to call it. With the order page, what I found is that the upsell should be your own product, something similar, something that we're doing with the womenfiguredout.com website is, Frank, you're doing an audio upsell.
Right. That's going to be one of the new things added. I think we're going to do maybe just like $20, so it's real quick.
Right, and it's going to be on the actual order page, so he's going to be able to bump up his average order from, you know, $27 book up to, you know, $40-something. That's a pretty significant difference. And basically all he did is, you know, just redid his book in audio format, and added a couple of bonus things. One of the other things is the thank you page, which is a place where people just rarely use. I find so often most new marketers never even use this real estate. Frank, we used it on your website. You're one of my affiliates, and you've been making some good money with it.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as they get everything settled and they start clicking around going, hey, what's this? You know, some other good deals that are recommended. And as long as they're in that buying mode, they go and buy something else.
Exactly. And, you know, is it costing you anything?
No, not at all.
Free money. So, Frank's going to be getting a check for me soon, and it's free money for him. So on the thank you page, I would look to advertise affiliate offers, stuff that's very similar, stuff that you trust and that you know is going to be valuable for your customers, because your customers are very important to you. One of the other things with the upsells is give visitors enough time to consider your offer promotion. I think I should have put this on the actual order page. Excuse me for that. With a date, limited time bonus, limited quantity. That should go on topic number five. The other thing Andrew mentioned was make it easy. He mentioned a one click on that order form. All people had to do was just check one box and they got that reseller license package added to their program. So make it really simple. Somebody that does this very, very well, any of Corey Rudel's websites, the marketingtips.com websites, if you check out any one of their products, click on the order pages, you'll see they use multiple upsells. So you want to definitely consider using multiple upsells. By that I mean you can have an upsell on your order page and you can have an upsell on your thank you page. You can have an upsell all along the way. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do with that. And, I've pretty much wrapped up a lot of the stuff I wanted to talk about. Mike, do you have anything you wanted to add, maybe? Stuff that we didn't?
Well, I guess maybe just a few extra little things, if you don't mind.
No, let's...
All right.
Let's go.
Well, here's a couple of things. First of all, one of the things that people have to understand is that when you're writing a sales letter, for example, for a website, you are engaging in the conversation with your reader. And one of the things that I'm asked often as a copywriter and a web designer is how much yellow highlighting should I put in, how much bolding should I put in, how much italicizing and underlining and all that wonderful stuff. Well, I want to make sure that people understand two critical components. One thing is, just like the elements that we mentioned at the beginning of this call or at the middle of this call that help people to stop scanning and to start reading your copy, if you put too much yellow highlighting, first of all, yellow highlighting is meant to emphasize an important point that you want to drive home. If you bombard your sales letter with a lot of yellow highlighting, then you're basically making your entire sales letter look the same. So what's the point of emphasizing anything with the yellow highlighting? So I like to use things like that, but sparingly. And I really do want to use it in areas where it drives home critical components or critical points or complex ideas that's hard to drive home, and I want to really get that in the comprehension level high on those points. And I use the yellow highlighting. I'll use bolding and all that stuff. The second thing is, I'm speaking from a copywriter's perspective, but it really ties in with formatting and web design. When you're selling something, when you're using a website to sell a product, you're basically entering in a conversation with the customer. If you were to sit face-to-face with a salesperson, and remember this, that a website is basically your salesperson. If you were to sit face-to-face with a salesperson, would a salesperson give you a long, boring lecture about your about their product? Of course not. And in fact, one of the reasons why you're going to listen to the person, believe the person, and then take action when the person asks you to take action is because they're passionate, they're enthusiastic. You know, when you mentioned earlier, Dave, about being happy and happiness, those are critical components that you see. You see those things when you are in a face-to-face encounter. But when you're not, when you're in front of a screen, how can you convey those things? Here's how you do it. Use italics, use bold, use capital letters. Use things in strategic locations and again, sparsely, to drive home critical components that you would normally do in a face-to-face encounter. Here's a great tip. Read your copy out loud. Any time where you sort of slow down, pause, emphasize, inflect your voice, talk louder to drive home key points you're passionate about, those are elements that you should really emphasize in using formatting. To me, formatting is sort of the web design version of trying to speak with, you know, intonation, inflection, and all those things. I'll give you an example. If I told you, I didn't say I stole the cookie. I didn't say he stole the cookie. Now, that's a very typical sentence. If I inflected every single one word in just one word at a time, I could come up with so many different meanings. Like, for example, I didn't say he stole the cookie. What does that say? Does that say I didn't say he stole the cookie? No, it means I personally didn't say. It means that maybe somebody else said it. If I say, I didn't say he stole a cookie, maybe I wrote it. I didn't say he stole a cookie. Well, maybe she did. I didn't say he stole the cookie. Maybe he stole the sandwich. I didn't say he stole the cookie. Maybe he was just borrowing it. So you see how much I put inflection on one word, and it can actually change completely the meaning of the sentence. Online, you don't have that luxury. You only have words. Well, that's where the beauty of formatting comes in. That's where when you speak your copy out loud, and if there's certain points that you really want to drive home, use bolding, use yellow highlighting, use italics. But again, just for those things that you really want to emphasize and talk about. If I tell you, you're going to make lots of money with the system. You see, I just inflected the word lots. Well, put that in capitals, italicized or bold, whatever the case is. To emphasize that it's like as if I was saying it to you face-to-face and putting a lot of emphasis on the word lot. So think of it that way. Think of your copy or your website as your salesperson, as if that person is selling in a conversational way your product or service. And then look at what words you want to emphasize to drive those critical points home, and then use that to the formatting trick that I just mentioned to do that. And use it sparingly, of course, because then you sort of muddy your entire sales message and your website looks really cheap and unprofessional. Anyway,
yeah,
that was my...
Less is more.
Exactly. So
less
anyway,
is more. We actually had a talk about this the other day. I remember on Instant Messenger, I was telling you, your copy is looking kind of clean these days. Your website's looking kind of clean.
I'm actually drinking coffee after saying that. I almost spilled my coffee. I think it really depends on also on the target market. The target market is so important. I mean, if you have a target market that, and here's the biggest problem that I see when people have me critique their websites, whether it's the design or the copy, is that they tend to think that, oh, I don't want to do these, I don't want to add graphics. I don't want to do these things because, oh, it's intuitive. I don't want to insult my reader's intelligence. You mentioned, Dave, earlier that when you use audio buttons, you follow what Armin Warren does, which is to say to people what they have to do and talk about what they're going to do in the copy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't do that because they say, I don't want to insult my... That's the same thing as people who use green links without the underlines, you know, because they think, oh, it's intuitive. People will know it's a link. No, they won't. At an unconscious level, they have to think about it to understand what you're doing. You have to think about that. If I pay attention to the design, if I pay attention to the little nuances in your copy, yes, I will probably see that. Yes, it is intuitive. But my goal is not to get you to focus on what links are links or what, or you know, what you should do or not do. I want
Thanks too much
focus,
energy.
I want you to focus on reading the darn copy, and I want you to take action. I want you to buy my product. And I've done this. I've dumbed down copy. I mean, I've written copy for engineers that sold products and software programs to other engineers. And guess what? I dumbed down the copy. You know, people might think at a university level, but they act. They read and they act at a 6th to 7th grade level. So don't be shy in saying, you know, I want you to take this, you know, when you sit, for example, using the audio button, I want you to take 5 minutes right now and start reading the copy, and I want you to do this, I want you to do that. When you're on the order page, I want you to fill out the form, you know, see that top box there, that's your name. Enter your name right there, and enter your credit card information, and click that big button that you see there. It says, please send me my package now, Andrew, or please send me my package now, Dave. And then click that button, and you'll be redirected to the thank you page, and your order, you know, whatever. I'm expanding on this, but it's so crucial. People tend to think that people will understand automatically what they're trying to do. No, they won't. If they have to think to understand what you're trying to do, then you get them to think about something different than your copy, which is not the point.
It's interesting that you brought that up. I just had a thought in my head, but it reminds me of, you know, any store that you go to. You can go to a store. If you have a helpful person, salesperson, that, you know, instead of waiting in the line, takes you and says, here, come over here, takes you out of line, puts you in the at her register, for instance, you know, hey, can I get you anything else? Is there anything else that you need? How is the product? You know, how is the thing? Did you find everything? Did you find this, you know, the right size? Hey, we have something like this. This would match. You're in a much better state of mind.
Exactly. When you go for example, to a Walmart, and you've got several caches open, now you won't know if the cache is open unless you see a person there. But even then, there, you know, every cache has sort of a number system, a big, you know, sign at the top of their cache register with a light. When it's lit, it tells you the cache is open. You know, if you walk through and then the person is just standing there and there's no light, or there's no way to know that if there's actual, you know, there's a cashier there, I mean, will Walmart say, oh, it's intuitive, they'll know it's open? Of course not. They'll tell you, come to this cash, we're open, let me take your order right now. Well, it's the same thing, and it doesn't matter if you're an engineer or a septic tank company owner. The thing is that you need to dumb down your copy, and you need to take people by the hand, and you need to do that as much as with your copy as with your web design.
And with everything, make it simple.
Absolutely, make it simple, and that's the key.
Yeah, I hope that you know, this call, I mean, we've shown like the elements that are you know, you can change all these things in your website, and you don't have to pay some, you know, fancy designer to do them all. I mean, I'm sure most people can teach themselves or get their webmaster to do it. And, you know, what I want to talk about today is just at the end is, I mean, if you've enjoyed this call, you're going to have a chance to get a copy of this call and make 100% profits with it, because what we're going to do it's a very limited time only, is we're offering a handful of people full resale rights. And I'll just describe what that is before we go. You'll get the full MP3 recording of this call. If you feel like, you know, if you got a lot out of this call, think of what, you know, when you sell it to other people, what they'll get out. We're gonna supply you with the full PDF transcripts of the call. Dave is gonna give you five free direct response website templates, and I'm gonna write promotional ad copy for you, and also a custom built sales letter. And the total value of this is, you know, easily between the $2,000 to $3,000 bracket. And, you know, Dave and I, you know, do this full time. You know, if you're interested in getting these resale rights, the price today is $197. You can go to the website right now, which is makemywebsitesell.com. Dave, would you spell that out for me, please? Because my accent sometimes confuses people.
Confuses me, too. makemywebsitesell, makemywebsitesell.com. Guys, you know, I hope you enjoyed the call. There's tons of stuff here. Remember, it just takes one tip, one idea, one strategy, any of these things to explode your online sales. You know, I've done it with my business. I've helped clients do it, as you can tell. You know, it's awesome. And you have the tools right in front of you right now to really make a significant difference in your online sales and your website.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, the stuff that people have learned, I mean, you can supply this information to people. I mean, we had over 2,800 people register for the call, which was incredible. So it shows, you know, there is a huge demand here for this product. And, you know, for, you know, $197, less than $200, you're going to get, you know, the recordings, you're going to get the transcripts, website templates. We're even going to give you, I mean, Dave and I have created the website that you're going to get to sell this. The only thing you need to do is hook up your payment processor and start advertising. You can attract joint venture partners. And as I say, you're not going to be able to go to this website and order resale rights all the time. We're going to be closing out the offer very soon. So the website, again, is makemywebsitesell.com. You know, I thank you for all being on the call, and especially to Michael and Frank for taking time out of what we know is a very busy schedule. Just want to say thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm sure everybody does.
Good night.
And everybody up on the call, thank you very much. Maybe we can open up the lines for a second. And Frank and Mike, have a good night. Let's
take it off of mute.
And let's see if we can, maybe I'll take some questions.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, let's go one question at a time. I'm going to do as many as I can.
We've only got 5 minutes, by the way, Dave, before the line cuts off, so let's go quick.
I'll do as many as I can for the people. Okay, man, first one, first serve. Let's go.
The second most important thing in the copy, was the first was the headline, and the second is the subheadline?
The first one is the headline, and the second one is the PS, you know, in the bottom area.
Yes.
Yeah, because people just scroll all the way down to the bottom and read that. So definitely check out Mike Thornton's copy at the PS. He's the master at really crafting those. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Oh. How you doing?
A lot of this stuff is excellent information, but a lot of it is totally useless if we don't know how to do it. Like you're talking about Johnson boxes. Well, what the heck is that, and how am I supposed to make one?
Well, that's why the packet that Andrew and Dave are selling includes templates and all those wonderful things that will help you to apply a lot of those things. So, Dave,
exactly.
You want to add something to that?
Yeah, you know, and so a lot of the stuff, if you don't know how to do it, obviously you haven't built the website yourself, you can definitely give these specific things to your web designer, or, you know, we can refer one to you.
Oh,
and, you know, and they can do it for you. You know, so ultimately, I think you want to have as much control over your online business as possible. So I think it would be a good thing to ultimately learn some HTML and be able to make the changes for yourself. So that way you don't have to rely on anybody else.
But I think also another very, and that's a very good question that gentleman had, is if you want to just go into any, you know, go to Google and then type in Johnson Box and or Johnson Box on a website, whatever the case is.
And actually, it's, you know, speaking of which, you just, sorry to cut you off, Mike. You can check out our website, the makemywebsitesell.com website, and almost every single thing that we've discussed on the call tonight, I've used on this website specifically for that. You know, and over the next couple of weeks, I'll make sure to, you know, put some emails out and include some links so you guys can check out some other websites that have each of those strategies.
I had a question, if you don't mind. It was mentioned that, you know, obviously it's important to have a call to action, you know, I mean, obviously, and then to emphasize that with a PS at the bottom, how have any of you tested whether to have like an initial call to action, like in the first fold of the screen, and then, you know, and then have one at the end and, along with a postscript? Have any of you tested if that would be something other than just, you know, an opt-in, you know, box? I mean, an actual call to action to a product.
Mike, you want to take that one?
Well, it really depends
like
on the price of the product. Like the price level of the product is so important. If you have a lower end product, like most ebooks, and if your headline and the first, what we call the lead and copy, the lead is the first introductory paragraph. If you have enough space there to make your offer right there, yeah, put a link there at the top. But what I found is for medium to higher ticket items, people will click on that link to figure out what the price is to justify reading the rest of the copy. And very often that lowers sales. You want to make your offer, you want to have enough space to make your an ample offer before you actually get them to call, to make a call to action. So I tend to put them usually about starting in the middle rather than in the top, because too early actually causes procrastination. People will just close their browsers and leave.
Right. That's why I tend not to put links at the top. Or anywhere near there.
Yeah, I have a question.
I think we got room for one more.
This program, do we have a website where we can go to and go back over this worksheet?
Actually, we included, you mean the actual worksheet itself, or the worksheet?
Yeah, they will email the worksheet.
Some of the blanks I didn't get filled in, so.
Oh, yeah, not a problem. We're actually finishing that up right now, and tonight we're going to email out the full one, everything, all the information on them.
Oh, okay. Now, this is what we paid for, right, at $97, the conference call?
Well, and the whole resale package, yeah, including
the template. We have the option to resell this package for you with a...
Actually, for yourself. You
can get 100% of the profits.
Oh.
Now, did you recommend a price for this?
I would say a minimum selling price of $67, $67 to the $97 range.
Yeah, and in the course, when you get the package with the sales copy and everything like that, we'll have the price point basically set up.
But you don't get any of the proceeds, huh?
Well, I think we're just about out of time. They're going to probably boot us off the line.
Quick question, if you don't mind. Is there a copy of the direct response sales letter available to look at before purchasing?
I think Andrew, you working on that still? Or he was asking about the sales copy for the promotional sales copy for the...
Yeah, it'll be ready. I'm saying 5 days maximum for everything.
There you go.
Okay.
Is there a way to look at it before purchasing the package?
Put the boot up. I got to go, so thank you so much for having me on the call. I'll talk to you guys very soon.
Okay, bye, Michael.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, we want to get the...
It'd be nice to see the letter before purchasing the package to be sure that's what you want to...
Yeah, sure. It'll take probably 2 to 3 days. I'm just saying 5 days just to give time for...
Everything be explained in that, right?
Yeah.
So can you make the deadline for us to purchase it 2 to 3 days before it's up so we can look at it to make that
decision? Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, no problem.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Do we need a license?
That's what you get when you make the purchase. You get the resale license with it.
Okay.
I think we're going to have to go here, folks. The conference call company are telling us that our time is up. But great having you on the call. I hope you got a ton of good information out of it. And we'll be in touch by email.